Brilliant. Thank you, Ruth. So I know some of the kids were like, well, we don't really like anything about school. We just like home time, or we like school dinners, or we like golden time. But I wonder if any of the adults could tell us what they learn at school that is significant to what they do today, just so that the kids hear that actually it might have some worth and value, perhaps, potentially. Pauline, what did you learn at school that's useful now?
One of the things I learned that when I did fail dramatically my English literature O-level, it wasn't the end of the world.
Brilliant. Okay, so sometimes things are not the end of the world. Anybody learn anything like a particular skill at school? Rachel?
Reading, because I spend hours reading documents.
Yeah, so that's really important, isn't it? And that's what we're trying to do today in Buying This Right, is we're trying to give a child in Malawi the opportunity to have that opportunity of learning something that will change their life in the future. So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, well, buying a kilogram or 2 kilograms or whatever of rice is not a big thing for most of us, is it? It's quite a wee thing. But actually, if we all club together and do the challenge, that makes a huge difference to somebody else, doesn't it? And as I was thinking about that, and we wanted to make a focus of that this morning because we as a church feel it's so important to strengthen that link between us and those who are maybe less fortunate than us. I was thinking, if we can make a difference by doing a tiny thing, then what else might be possible? And it reminded me of something called the butterfly effect. I don't know whether you've heard of this phenomenon, but as I read this on Wikipedia, obviously, which is the source of all goodness, this is the butterfly effect. A butterfly's wings, it's about weather, really. Butterfly's wings might create tiny changes in the atmosphere that may ultimately alter the path of a tornado, which is like a big thing, delay, accelerate, or even prevent the occurrence of a tornado in another location. Note that the butterfly does not power or directly create the tornado. The flap of the wings is part of the initial conditions. One set of conditions leads to a tornado, while the other set of conditions doesn't. The flapping wing represents a small change in the initial condition of the system, which causes a chain of events leading to large-scale alterations of events. Had the butterfly not flapped its wings, the trajectory of the system might have been vastly different. That's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it? Like, it blows my mind a little bit, because how big is a butterfly? Maybe that big, maybe a wee bit smaller. And one flap of a butterfly's wings has the potential to alter something that's massive. But here's the really important line that's underlined. The butterfly doesn't power or create the tornado, and that's what I want us to remember as we go on to the rest of the service this morning. It's not the butterfly that makes it happen, but the butterfly can be a contributing factor to the initial conditions of making something massive happen. Okay, so let's hold on to that thought as we go into the rest this morning. Right, so I need a couple of volunteers. I need somebody who wants to be a Lego designer when they grow up. That'll be Malcolm, and Jake's going to help you. And you're going to come to this table. And I need somebody else who's good at Lego. Maybe Christopher, do you want to come? And you can come on this table here. Now, here's the challenge. Both of you have got the same thing to build. It's like a little flying spacecraft thing. Anyway, so there's the instructions, there's pieces, you've got a picture to follow. Okay, so you just work away and see if you can create something. This thing on the front, on the picture. Okay, and I'll come back to you in a minute. So work quick. Brilliant. Okay, so while they're doing this, let's look at this passage, which I think has something to say to us this morning and maybe fits in with this idea of this butterfly effect as well. So if you want to turn to it in the Bible, you can do, then you'll be looking at the NIV version. This is the contemporary English version, which I just find has some nice, easy language. So can we read it together? Yeah, let's go. Apollos and I are merely servants who helped you to have faith. It was the Lord who made it all happen. I planted the seeds, Apollos watered them, but God made them sprout and grow. What matters isn't those who planted or watered, but God who made the plants grow. The one who plants is just as important as the one who waters, and each one will be paid for what they do. Apollos and I work together for God, and you are God's garden and God's building. What cool name. Wouldn't you like to be called Apollos? It's like a superhero name. Well, no one would ever forget you, would they? So here's the context of this passage. Paul, who's the guy who had that amazing experience of Jesus on the road to Damascus and suddenly turned his life around and began to follow Jesus. He has gone to a city called Corinth and he's told them about Jesus and he started this new church. And the context of this letter that he's writing to them is that they're having an argument about which leader they should follow. So should they follow Paul or should they follow Apollos and what's it all about? And they're having this big argument and Paul's trying to say, you've really lost the plot. You've not got the point at all. They'd misunderstood the role that their leaders had. The leaders weren't there to lead and be famous and be important in their own right. The leaders were there to point the new church to Jesus, to help them to look at him, learn about him, get to know him and change their lives because of that. Now, God had asked Paul and Apollos to do particular things in the growth of this new church. Paul had gone to them and he told them about the message of Jesus to start with. He planted the seed. That's how this language puts it in this passage. And Apollos had been watering the seed. So I'm guessing that means that he'd been helping them to grow, that he'd been looking after them, that he'd been encouraging them, spurring them on, telling them stuff, discipling them, if you like. So they had slightly different roles. But it was God who was, oops, hello boys, who was making them grow as followers of Jesus. Paul and Apollos had important things to do, but they didn't make it happen. It was God who was helping the people to grow. Now, as God's church here in St. Silas, his family on earth, we're called to work together as a team. This passage talks about Paul and Apollos working together and the people working together as a team, don't they? It's not for our own ends. It's not so that we do something important and everyone says how amazing we are, but it's to point people towards God. It's to further his kingdom. Now, this passage uses two pictures, doesn't it? It says, you are God's garden and you are God's building. Now, we might say it's all about the kingdom, but really we're talking about building something together, growing something together that God is responsible for, that he actually makes grow, but he gives us a part to play in each of that. And each of our parts is a tiny part, just like the butterfly flaps its tiny little wing and it changes a tiny little thing. Just like you might buy one bag of rice this morning, I'm getting there. You might buy one bag of rice this morning and that's a teeny tiny thing, but together those conditions allow God to work through his stuff. God can do it on his own. He's really big and really, really clever. He powers the tornado, if you want to go back to the butterfly analogy. But actually, we get to help in that. And that's an immense privilege. And that's what we're going to think about this morning, about the tiny parts that we play. It reminds me a bit of this idea of the kingdom footprint that we often talk about the kingdom effect that the things that we do every day have. And when we first started to talk about that phrase, well, it would be, do you remember when we used to do together every week and we had the zones and the kids were over here and then we all came together and stuff like that? It was a term that was coined at that point. And I thought it'd be good to go back to our definition of a kingdom footprint because I think we might find it helpful this morning as we think about what we're called to and the difference that we can make for the kingdom. So this is our definition of the kingdom footprint. An unquantifiable measure of the impact that our activities have on God's creation, on the lives of people, and in situations that affect our world, causing change that makes Jesus known and glorifies God. It relates to the amount of kingdom effect produced in our day-to-day lives through caring, loving, preferring and serving, resulting in life-giving power as Jesus is received and the kingdom breaks in. The kingdom footprint is a measurement of all kingdom effect that we individually produce and has heavenly significance, which is impossible to calculate. So we've got this idea this morning that the little things that we do can have massive heavenly significance because God takes them and uses them in his big plan to further his kingdom and to change the world. Does that make sense? That's the key idea of this morning. The small things that we do that God asks us to do can make a big, big impact. We are getting there, I promise. Let's look at the second bit of this passage and then we'll perhaps look at this Lego as well. So let's read the second part of this passage together, shall we? So, God was kind and let me become an expert builder. I laid a foundation on which others have built. But we must each be careful how we build because Christ is the only foundation. I love Paul. He's not shy about saying what he's good at, is he? So he became an expert builder. God gave him special gifts to be able to do his bit. And you know, for each of us, God gives us special gifts to be able to do our bit as well. So we might have particular friendships. We might have particular situations that we find ourselves in. We might have a particular way with words. Maybe we're really, really good at explaining what God's all about. We might have a particular job or a particular ministry that we're involved in. And all these things can be used to create a kingdom footprint or build the building, as Paul is talking about just now. Just hang on a wee second. So Paul says, just be careful that you don't get carried away with yourself. Just be careful that you don't think that your bit is the most important bit and your bit is actually what it's all about. What he's saying here is that the foundation is Jesus. Everything we do is all about Jesus. It's not because we're good at this. It's not because we happen to be here. It's not because of anything that we do. It's all about Jesus. Jake, do you want to go and sit beside your dad for a moment? Thanks. And we'll come back up in a minute and look at that plane. So, we need to make sure that we follow Jesus. We need to make sure that he's the reason why we do absolutely everything that we do, the tiny things and the bigger things. It's not about us. It's about him. He affects it. He makes it happen. He powers the thing, and we just get to join in. So let's have a look at this Lego. Christopher, how are you getting on? He's almost done. Oh, it's looking absolutely brilliant. So Christopher had the instructions, always handy. And all the right pieces, okay? He had the right conditions. So actually, Christopher's piece of Lego is looking, just want to stand up, wave what you have. You can finish it off in a second. Okay, it's looking pretty good. It's looking pretty identical to the one on the front of the leaflet. I think you've done a great job. Awesome stuff. You can finish that off. You guys had a picture of what you were trying to build, but you didn't have any instructions, and you had bits that were kind of about right. So hold up your plane. It's a good plane, like as Lego designers go, it's an excellent plane, but it's not exactly the right thing, is it? So why is it not exactly the right thing?
Because we didn't have the right pieces.
And?
We don't have instructions.
You didn't have instructions either. Brilliant. You guys can sit down if you like. Please don't scatter the Lego bits everywhere. You can finish that off, Christopher. It is your prize. Well done. Brilliant stuff. So, we need to make sure that we're following the plan. If you go back to what Paul is talking about here, he's talking about building a building, isn't he? Now, what do you need to build a building? Actually, none of our people who do this job are here this morning. What's the thing that you need to start with before you do anything? Before the foundations? Plans. So, you need an architect, don't you? Yeah, you need to make sure that you know what you're going for. And Jesus, if you like, it's the architect. It's not just the foundation. I think he's the architect. Let's take this picture a whole bit further. He's the architect of everything that's going on. So when he asks us to build something, do something, say something, go somewhere, get involved in something, he knows what he's working towards. So actually, if we get good at listening to God and listening to what he asks us to do, then we'll see the kingdom grow. More about that a wee bit later. But for now, we'd love you to explore some ideas about how the kingdom grows. And we're going to do this in several different ways this morning. So we're going to be quite active. So we've got over here, we've got some stuff that is going to help you make bread. Now, this is probably an activity for groups of people because there's only like 10 sets or something like that. So it might be good for you if you're quite a hands-on person, maybe if you're a wee bit younger. You can go, there's instructions. You need to have your appropriate adults with you. And if you spill the flour, it's fine. We have Hoovers. It's all good. So we'd love you to have a little go at making bread. And as you're making bread, we would love you to talk about why that is a picture of what we're talking about this morning. So what are the necessary conditions how God's kingdom grows and how we do this? Okay? How can we be obedient in the way that God asks us to help his kingdom grow? And why are these activities linked to the idea of the kingdom growing? And can you think of places in the Bible that use the pictures? Okay, so there's one activity to make bread here. Obviously, you need to take it home to cook it because that's just a whole different ball game. And we're also going to plant some seeds. So on the next table up, there's some pots and there's some herb seeds and there's some compost. Again, we could try not to make too much mess with the compost. That would be amazing. So you can plant some seeds. And again, have a look at these questions. What are the necessary conditions for the kingdom to grow? How can we be obedient to Jesus in growing the kingdom? And why is that activity linked to the idea of the kingdom growing? And can you think of places in the Bible that use that picture? Now, if you would rather not be active and messy, we've also got another picture of the kingdom on a wee Bible study sheet with a commentary and stuff. And we would love you to gather into groups, grab yourself a cup of tea and a piece of cake, and have a good chat through this sheet. Okay? Does that make sense? So we'll probably spend the next 15 minutes doing this so we can all really explore this together, because this service is all about our shared experience together. So you can make bread, you can plant seeds, or you can come and get a sheet to explore another biblical picture of the kingdom growing. And you can grab yourself a cup of tea and a piece of cake, and we will get back together in a few minutes. So if you want to turn in your Bible to Matthew chapter 13, you can see the pictures that we've been painting this morning, or that Jesus painted first and that we've been acting out this morning. Jesus is building a picture of what the kingdom of God looks like. And if you've been doing the Bible study, you've probably looked in depth at what some of that looks like. But if you've been over here and thinking about why are we getting you to do these activities? It says this, she says, trying to find it. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into a large amount of flour until it worked through all the dough. You don't just put the yeast in and it's in a wee bit of the bread, it's in all of the bread, and it makes the bread rise, it makes the bread get bigger. And so you can see the picture, can't you? The things that we do when Jesus asks us to for the kingdom make the kingdom get bigger because he makes it grow. And then we looked at the seeds over here, and Jesus says here, he says, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed which a man took and planted in his field. Though it's the smallest of all your seeds, yet when it grows, it's the largest of all the garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air can come and perch in its branches. Seeds are really, really tiny. I was talking to Cara about this. Seeds are teeny tiny, but what they grow into can have a big impact. They can be big things. They can be things that grow things and we can eat from them, and they do really good stuff for us as well. So you can see the picture again, that the little things that we do, the seeds that we plant, the little things that we get on with actually make a big difference. You know, the kingdom is supposed to be really explosive in growth. It's not supposed to just like grow a wee bit and then stop. It's supposed to be massively explosive. If you think about the way that cells divide and grow, or a virus divides and grows, it happens exponentially. Do any of you guys who are younger know what exponentially means? No, you're mostly too young, I think. It means that it divides and then it divides again and multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. So, if we're thinking about this, if we're thinking about the things that God asks us to do, let's think about the fact that God asks us to make disciples, and he asks us to go and speak to other people about Jesus. And we'll think a little bit about how we do that in just a minute. But say that each of us helped two other people to get to know Jesus. And say that each of those two people then helped another two people to get to know Jesus. You're a maths teacher, aren't you, Simon? Excellent. We'll get you involved in a minute. And then, so how many would that make? We've had two and they've had two? Four. Thanks, Jodie. So then each of those people then speaks to another two people each. So how many will that be? That was great. Eight. Okay. And then each of those eight people tells another two people and helps another two people get to know Jesus. We would have 16. And then what would the next number be?
32.
Yes. And then?
64.
And then?
65.
No, not 65. 128. 128. And then? 256. And then 512. Right, so you get the picture, right? So if all of us was doing all of that, then there would be lots of people getting to know Jesus all the time, wouldn't there? And that's quite exciting, no? I think that's quite exciting. Okay, what happened if we didn't just do that once, but actually, once we brought two people to get to know Jesus, actually we carried on, and then another two people, and then they did the same thing. Like that, like massively multiplies the numbers, doesn't it? I'm sure Simon could write us a clever formula that would give us the potential outcome, maybe. But anyway, you can see how explosive it's supposed to be, and that's exciting, isn't it? Okay? It doesn't always seem to happen like that if we're truthful. Like in my life, I can think of maybe a couple of people that have come to know Jesus, but it's not this massive growth that we're describing this morning and that we're getting excited about. You know, Jesus has got some really good instructions for how we're supposed to make disciples, and we've looked at this passage loads and loads of times, so we're just not going to look at it in much depth this morning. But he's really clear. He sends out the 72 to go and introduce people to him. And this is really the key part of this. As soon as you enter a home, say, God bless this home with peace. If the people living there are peace-loving, your prayer for peace will bless them. But if they're not peace-loving, your prayer will return to you. So, and then it says, stay with them and do life with them. We've talked a lot, haven't we, about finding a person of peace. Yeah? Some of you are like, have we? Do you recognize that concept? Brilliant. Okay, so just can you think, just sort of wave vaguely at me, can you think of a person of peace in your life at the moment? Do we know what a person of peace looks like? We're going to do this really, really quickly because we are massively running out of time. Here's some things that help us know what a person of peace looks like. And they all begin with P, which is very exciting. So prepare. A person of peace is somebody who's moving towards Jesus. So you might be the person who just has a wee chat with them and plants a seed that they go, oh, Jesus, I'd like to find out a bit more about who he is. So we prepare and then God does amazing things. And a person of peace can be found that way. Second word is presence. Presence is being like Jesus, doing what Jesus asked us to do, saying what he asked us to say. And a person of peace will reveal themselves because they'll go, why is it that you do that? Why do you go to church on a Sunday? Why didn't you act like I would have acted in that particular situation? That's a person of peace. And then all we have to do is do life with them, be friends with them, invest our life alongside theirs. A person of peace can be a permanent person in your life. And often we require lots of patience for these people because they can be in our lives a long time and they can look not the slightest bit interested in Jesus at all. You know, God is never in a hurry and he is never late. He has plans and purposes for those people. And we just have to be patient and wait for the moment when they start to ask questions and when we can introduce them to Jesus as well. Next word is perception. Sometimes we need to just be watchful for the moments when Jesus asks us to do something. We need to be good at listening to him and listening to what we've to do. You know those moments where you think, I'm just going to have a conversation about that. Or the moments in a conversation where you go, I'm just going to ask that question. And then you end up having an amazing conversation. And the person is asking all sorts of exciting questions about Jesus, about God, about stuff that has an eternal significance. A person of peace can be somebody who's passing. It can be somebody who's on a bus, on a train, at the checkout. And you just have a tiny, tiny little conversation with them. And you get an opportunity to say something or to say why you did something in a particular way. And maybe you've just planted the seed. And maybe you'll never know what happens to that seed afterwards. But that person has been a person of peace because they've been interested in what you've had to say. sometimes proclaiming Jesus' good news, like in a service, like if you bring someone to the carol service and they hear the message, that can reveal a person of peace. Very often we want to get people in, do a big preach, and then they'll all become Christians. But we know that that doesn't always happen. Sometimes that the purpose of that proclamation is to obviously glorify God, but also to reveal a person of peace, because on the way home they'll say, what was that all about? I was really interested in that. Let's have a conversation about that. And the person of peace is revealed, and then we can get in and do relationship with them, live alongside them, love them, and see them grow to be a follower of Jesus. And the last thing is power. Sometimes God shows up and does a miracle, doesn't he? You know, often when we pray for people who don't yet know Jesus, God turns up and does incredible things. And a person of peace asks why. A person of peace goes, what was that? What happened there? Who did that? Why was that different? So there's lots and lots of ways that we can spot people of peace in our lives. And all we need to do is get alongside them, do life with them, be friends, make friends, and God does the rest. He's the one that makes it grow. So actually, here's the key things. We need the right conditions, so we need to be close to a person of peace, and then we need obedience. We need to be close to Jesus. And if we're close to a person of peace and we're close to Jesus, we'll hear what Jesus is asking us to do. We'll hear the way that he's asking us to do life with a person. And then we'll be obedient, we'll do what he asks, and we will see amazing things happen. We will see the kingdom grow. We will see an explosion. God does it. God powers it. It's all about him, but it's awesome because we get to help. And it's the tiny, tiny things that we do that can create the conditions for God just to come in and do amazingly huge stuff. So if you buy rice this morning, which we hope you will, every time you eat that rice in the next little while, you might like to be reflecting on the small things that you're doing across your life and the small ways that you're listening to Jesus' voice and seeing the big things that are growing from that. And maybe you could pray every time you eat that rice, God, would you transform these small things that I'm doing into massive things and grow your kingdom and show your glory. That would be kind of cool. So we wanted to really finish this morning by hearing from somebody who obeyed Jesus' voice to go to a different country and meet people of peace.
It's about the 16th of February, but I send you greetings from New Destiny. And what I'm wanting to do for a series of films is to focus in on some of the work that we are doing here. So there's three different parts to our work. There's the Transformers groups with the local kids. There's what we call Transformers 2, which is working with older boys, age 18 plus, and then there's the weekend camps. So today I'm going to talk about the Transformer 2, or as we call them, our Sunday night boys, who, as you can see, are working away in the field behind me, trying to get rid of awful plants that seem to be growing everywhere. And what I'm going to do is we're going to talk a wee bit about a couple of these boys, just to give you an idea of who we're working with.
I'm Igor.
I'm Matt.
No. Hi, Osma.
Hi, Jonathan.
Paloki.
Fella, hi, I'm Michael.
Hi, I'm Michael.
Yeah. Well, we've got 11 boys at the moment in this group, and they all come from the slum, which is the nearest community to the farm, and they have different stories, but all of them have a real need for New Destiny in their lives, a need for God, but that's where they find God, at New Destiny. So one of them, for example, Osmar, is someone that we've known for quite a few years now, before we had Transformers. And he's a lad that was very neglected when he was growing up, and really was left without his mum or dad, because his mum left when he was very small, went off with someone else, left leaving him with his dad and big brother. Big brother's a drug addict, is now in prison, and will probably be getting another 10 years in prison. And his father died, sadly, just a few years ago, so leaving him really with nobody, trying to survive in this little house in the slum, So it very quickly became a drug den for the sort of hub of all the dealers. He was so vulnerable that he was very easily used by the drug traffickers, and he was used as a little airplane, they call it, where he was sent off to do drug errands. And so he was desperate for a family, really, a new destiny. When we started Transformers, we really went after him. We targeted him. We went after him. We would follow him into places that people probably wouldn't go. And, you know, he was getting taken away, being beaten up by the police and things like that. And we just kept, we didn't leave him alone. And as soon as he discovered there was going to be Transformers, he was out here. Is it today? Is it today? He was coming out all the time. And then when we did start, he never missed a Sunday. That was him. He's with this, the older group, the Sunday night group. And he's 18 tomorrow, actually. And we're everything to him, you know. He's found a family here. So it's another one that comes to mind who's often said that without the work here, he doesn't know how he would survive, is Eduardo. And he is someone that lost his big sister to cancer a few years ago, and that left a huge hole in his life. He lived up in the north of Brazil at that time, very poor family, and they came down here looking for work, actually. But his dad struggled with alcohol addiction his whole life, so ended up falling more into that side of things. And then after losing his sister last year, just after he'd started coming to the farm, his mum got sick. And a short time after she got sick, on the graduation of our Alpha course, because we actually started this work with the boys with an Alpha course, and on the graduation night, he asked us to pray because his mum was suddenly, things had taken a turn for the worse. That week he went to the hospital, and then she died, basically him lying beside her, and he was able to pray with her. And when he came back to here 2 weeks later, he said he didn't know what he would do without this place. He was just longing to get back here because he felt this is his family. These are the people he grieves with. It is us. So it's just really exciting to be part of a work like this where you just sense how much these kids need this and how few of them miss it. I could tell you more, but we probably don't have time.
Thanks, Morven. So next time we'll talk to you a bit more about working with the younger kids.
Sure. Transformers groups. Thank you so much, St. Silas. We love you guys. We pray for you. You're doing such a great work in partnering us with this work, and you've no idea how much the support means to us. So God bless you all. Keep in touch with us.
So Susie is part of our church family here, and she felt like God was asking her to go to New Destiny. And the first time she went to New Destiny, she just helped clean. And that doesn't sound like a very big thing at all, does it? And she was like, I don't know what use I'm going to be. I'm just going to go and do what I can. And then she felt God asked her to go back out there. And God is doing amazing things, not because Susie's making it happen, not because Morven is making it happen, because God is making it happen. But Susie and Morven and the rest of the team that work out there are just listening to God. They've put themselves in the initial conditions, if you like, that are going to be helpful, and then they're listening to God and they're doing what God is asking them, and amazing things are happening and lives are being changed. Here's one quote I want to leave you with. This is from a leadership guru, but it has relevance to each of us. I'm personally convinced that one person can be a change catalyst, a transformer in any situation, any organization. Such an individual is yeast that can leaven an entire loaf. It requires vision, initiative, patience, respect, persistence, courage, and faith to be a transforming leader. Now, this guy isn't talking about the kingdom of God. He's not talking about God at all, actually. He's just in a secular job helping leaders to develop. But actually, if those in the secular world can get hold of this truth, that the little things that we do can lead to changes and transformation, how much more does it stand when we have God's Holy Spirit working through it? When we're listening to the Spirit, when we're doing what he asks, we are seeing transformation happen because we're obedient and because we're placing ourselves in the right place. Every single one of us here this morning is called to be a transforming person. You might not think you're a leader, but you are a leader in all the situations that you find yourselves in. If you are helping somebody to become to get to know Jesus, if you're helping somebody, discipling somebody, you are a leader. Whether you're 5 years old and in primary one, or whether you're retired and at the local, I don't know, lunch club or whatever, There's so many opportunities that we can find ourselves in where God calls us to be, where we can listen to God, and where God will do extraordinary things with the teeny tiny things that we plant. The influence that we have as believers is massive. It works through entire organizations, entire schools, entire neighborhoods, entire cities, entire nations in the end. And that's our hope, and that's our prayer, and that's what we're so excited to be a part of.